My hands are a little dirty.
So am I.
If you're gonna die, and you knew you were gonna die, and you could choose how, what would you choose?
There's kids in there, and I want to get them out.
Hey guys and gals, and welcome to the Conduit Speaks podcast. I'm Chris Conduit, of course, and it's been far, far too long. Life and some recent health issues have gotten in the way, so to speak, but I assure you, outside of maybe taking multiple breaks during the course of recording this Welcome Back to Myself episode, there will not be any further extended breaks with the show itself, unless God strikes me down where I stand. So for the two or three of you that are listening to this, I appreciate your support and welcome back, of course. Hopefully we can do this again and start building our audience in the months that have transpired. There have been all kinds of interesting happenings in the genre film world, independent film, horror, dark drama, thrillers, you name it. And actually 2012, with, you know, the glut of these type of films that are finally now slowly being released, you know, films all the way back from 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, and even this year, there's so much wonderful stuff going on, and I'm going to be playing quite a bit of catch-up. If you'd like to head on over to theconduitspeaks.com, the website, what you can do there, because I have been doing a better job, still not a great job, but a better job of keeping that current. You can check out some of the stuff that that I've been watching and my thoughts on it. You should also make it a point to go to the Conduit Speaks Facebook page, because the main site is not a news site where I report things and, you know, post a lot of trailers and whatnot, but over on the Facebook page, you'll find a lot of stuff that's been interesting to me, piquing my interest, upcoming films, you know, trailers, stuff like that. So kind of together in tandem, the two work as one entity there. So as I said before, I'm not sure exactly how long I'm gonna hold up during these initial shows here. I'm still getting kind of my feet under me. Had a little scare with my throat, so my voice was essentially well out of commission. So I'm gonna try and keep these initial episodes short and sweet, so that we can get to the nitty gritty, and I can give you my thoughts on some films. And we can just go from there and see how things go. Do my best to bring back some of the fan favorites, the listener favorites, you know, themed episodes where I'll bring somebody on and we'll talk about particular goings-ons, groups of films, thoughts, ideas, concepts, and also looking forward to getting back into the interview game, because that's something that most, if not all of you, really, really enjoy, and I like doing it. So that's the plan from here on out. So today what I'm going to be doing is talking about three films, and they're three recently released, soon to be released, or hopefully soon to be released films. The first film that I want to talk about is one that I was just recently fortunate enough to get a sneak peek at. And that film is Lovely Molly, written and directed by Eduardo Sanchez. And of course, many of you will know him from films like 1999's The Blair Witch Project, 2006's Altered, 2008's Seventh Moon, and of course now, as I said, 2011's Lovely Molly. So being a, I don't know if I'd say a real fan of his work, but seeing The Blair Witch Project in theaters and kind of being a part of all the hoopla as that was coming out and it being played up as, you know, real documented footage. At the time that film came out, the found footage genre hadn't exactly been bitch slapped to death as it is today. So that is my favorite of his films to this point, up until I viewed Lovely Molly and Altered and Seventh Moon. They both had their merits, and Seventh Moon, I have to admit, was one of those films that I really wrote off after my first viewing for a number of reasons, namely because the cinematography was so dark and dank, it was really hard for me to make anything out. But I've since gone back and watched that a couple times, and it's grown on me. You know, the atmosphere and the creepiness of that particular your film really gets under my skin. So it's a recommend, not a blow your mind, you know, high recommend. But that being said, I was, you know, actually excited for Lovely Molly when I heard about it. Gosh, it was probably over a year ago at this point. The concept of it really piqued my interest. And well, before I get into kind of the synopsis of it, Gretchen Lodge plays the title character, Molly, and she's kind of new to the scene. And her husband, Tim, is played by Johnny Lewis, who he's been around. You may or may not have noticed him in films like The Runaways. He's also, I guess, appears on Sons of Anarchy, maybe sporadically or not. I don't watch that show. He was in the American remake of One Missed Call, Aliens vs. Predator, Requiem. But he's kind of a chameleon of an actor. He has several different looks to him. And of course, Alexandra Holden, who plays Molly's sister, Hannah, in the film. And she's actually a favorite of mine for, in particular, this movie from 2003 called Dead End, which is just a real oddball, strange, fun kind of road trip film. If you haven't seen that, I would definitely recommend that. It's very, very out there, though, and very strange. So it's kind of a love it or leave it type of film. But getting back into Lovely Molly, this piqued my interest early on because I have a pretty intense and deep fascination with kind of the crumbling psyche of the human and the human condition in general. And I think when horror films or even genre films in particular blur that line between the horror that exists within us all and the horror that attacks from the outside, I find it a lot more engaging. And this film, when it was initially kind of brought to the public and promoted, it was kind of like hinted at or teased that, is this girl possessed? is she or the place she lives haunted? So there was that really interesting gray area going on there. So as the film opens, we come to see Molly and Tim's wedding through the handheld video camera of someone who, you know, as is typical at these types of things, is documenting the wedding and talking to guests and having them say a little something about the couple and whatnot. And you see that, you know, Molly and Tim are that typical, you know, madly in love kind of, you know, young couple ready to take on the world, fresh start type of thing. And shortly after that, we have Tim and Molly moving into their new home, which is not a new home at all. It happens to be Molly and her sister Hannah's childhood home. The home is inhabitable, but yet not in tip-top shape. It's fallen into a bit of disrepair over the years. And as the movie progresses, what we do is learn that Molly, Hannah, their now deceased father, and the home have a bit of a history. And this tension and this darkness from the past continues to kind of grow and evolve and be explained through real subtle exposition throughout the story. And what kind of becomes the catalyst for Molly's descent and her possible haunting or possession is the fact that her husband Tim happens to be a truck driver. So he's coming and going, gone for a week, gone for a weekend, back home, things like that. And Hannah does her best to kind of allow Molly to lean on her and be there for her. But, you know, she's got her own stuff going on. She's a single mother who lives nearby. But her and Molly both work at, it appears to be like the local mall, and they're part of the cleaning crew there. So Molly and Tim are not well off by any means. You know, they need their jobs. They need to work hard. They need to, you know, do what they have to do to get by. And essentially what happens here as some secrets are revealed and we learn a little bit more about Molly's, in particular, Molly's dark past, but, you know, Hannah was a part of that too. We also find that there is a history of drug abuse with Molly, a lot of darkness, and the drug abuse and past experiences really lend itself to, again, being able to blur that line between not really being able to confirm 100% if what Molly is seeing and experiencing and the actions that the terrible, terrible choices and things that she is doing to herself and others, why this is all occurring and what's precipitating all this. It's a pretty fantastic film, and it's a very deep, dark character study. It investigates and really puts out onto the table for everyone to see familiar themes in terms of family dynamics and relationships that we can kind of all relate to in some way or another. And I guess, you know, most importantly here, and going into this and understanding that you need to have, is that this movie is all about the build-up. It's all about the atmosphere. Sanchez is absolutely a fantastic atmosphere guy. And Gretchen Lodge, it's so amazing when people like this, actors like this, come along, much like Amanda Fuller with Red, White, and Blue a couple years ago. And you've never heard of them, you've never seen them, and they absolutely floor you with their performances and the way they're engulfed by their character. All the actors are top-notch here. I found with this film that there's a genuine sense of dread. It is freaky. It is sad. It's a very tragic tale. And it's one of those films where nobody really comes out unscathed. So I'm highly recommending this, and you know, pretty darn sure that this is going to be one of my favorite films of the year. So I'm going to give Lovely Molly a 9 out of 10 and beg you to seek it out on video on demand, DVD, whatever other outlets that it's available. So that was Lovely Molly. As I get into movie number two, I have to send out a special thanks to my good friend Chris Halleck from allthingshorroronline.net, who actually was gracious enough to put me in contact with this film's director, which set the wheels in motion and allowed me to watch it as it's currently in, you know, the final stages of post-production. So no idea of a release date on this one, but the film is called Toad Road, and it's directed by Jason Banker, and stars in particular Sarah Ann Jones as Sarah, and James Davidson as James. And as you can maybe gather from that, these characters are kind of sort of really playing themselves. And what's interesting about this film is it's believed and been relayed to me that initially this was set out to be a straight up documentary, as Jason Banker does have a brief history in the documentary field. And it was kind of just to go along and follow a group of young adults who were kind of, you know, just floating along in a less than structured and sometimes not so healthy lifestyle. It's kind of a, you know, the drug culture, the generation that's looked upon as being lazy and you know, not so responsible. So we start off, and it essentially is centered around James and all of his friends, and, you know, smoking pot and doing other drugs, a lot of hallucinogenic drugs. They're eating mushrooms and taking acid and stuff like that. And it's my understanding that what you're seeing throughout probably the first two-thirds of this film is just actual footage of these kids going about their daily life. And apparently James is, you know, kind of, as I said, struggling through life, and his father has given him an ultimatum, essentially, that he's got to get his shit together or his dad's not paying for his apartment anymore. So it's one of those kind of stories. But the interesting little fact and twist here is that once we start chugging along here, what Jason Banker chose to do was kind of blend and blur the line between fact and fiction. And what we do is get a overlapping story that kind of piggybacks and intertwines with the you know, sad sack losers going through their motions about the Seven Gates of Hell, or a location known as Toad Road. And this is actually a real location, purported, the Seven Gates of Hell, in outside of York, Pennsylvania. And story goes, though, that that Hurricane Katrina, the remnants of it, washed Toad Road away, but that you can still access one of the gates from, I believe it's Trout Road or something like that. But in any event, it's kind of a local urban legend, whereas there is a couple accounts of the tales, but you can Wikipedia, you know, those and find out more about it. But the gist of it is that if you approach Toad Road, or what was Toad Road, you'll be greeted by a single red gate. And once you pass through that gate, you'll be on a sort of trail that, you know, you can walk along kind of with no issues. But if you wait until dark along that path, other gates will appear. These gates you can't see in the daylight. So the seven gates of hell, as you pass through each one, you go through the first gate, something changes. You go through the second gate, you know, more disturbing things occur. And the legend is that if you make it all the way through the seventh gate, you enter straight into hell. So what we have is this kind of budding relationship between James and Sarah. And Sarah begins to experiment with drugs, particularly, again, the hallucinogenic drugs. And she kind of talks James into venturing out to Toad Road after she's heard the story about it. And Sarah becomes really obsessed and focused on expanding her reality and kind of going further with the drugs than just getting fucked up. And so James and Sarah, James reluctantly, they set out. They go through gate one. They sit down. They eat their mushrooms, wait for darkness, and they go out. This film is monotonous to a fault. But at the same time, if you like character studies, documentary footage, seeing some odd and extreme behaviors, there's a scene where James willingly takes one hell of a beat down. And it's very much one of those films, I would say similar in tone to Left Bank. And I've talked about that on the show before. I believe you pronounced the title Linker Over. It's from 2008. But the way it's similar in tone is you have a couple, a relationship building, and even though the dichotomy is a little bit different here, you have a long, slow burn as everything plays itself out to kind of an inevitable end. But as a genre film fan, or maybe as a straight-up horror fan, the payoff literally comes in like the last 10 minutes of the film. So if you can go into this film with an open mind and you are someone who enjoys, you know, just kind of watching people, because that's what you have to do. And if you also are someone that feeds off truly gut-wrenching, what the fuck just happened, I'm going to have to think about this for a long time after watching this film type of finales, Toad Road might be right up your alley. But it's a film that's going to resonate with a choice few people. Those types of people that I just described. For me, I quite enjoyed it. I enjoyed kind of having the bottom fall out on me. And once things started getting really strange and the dynamics between James and Sarah started to change and get a little bit more sinister and off, you know, it made everything that led up to that worth it. I was able to stick with it and I liked it. I didn't particularly feel like I'd been deceived or played because, you know, the documentary footage and the actual footage that was tacked on there, you know, the director decided what story he ultimately wanted to tell using that footage, and I think he did it well. It's going to be a divisive film, though. Plain and simple. But for me, I really enjoyed it, and I would definitely recommend it to certain viewers. Toad Road gets an 8 out of 10 for me. So that's that. And let's head into the final film of the show. And that would be 2012's The Tall Man, written and directed by the mastermind behind an absolutely wonderful film, 2008's Martyrs, Pascal Lugier. My French is fantastic. And this film stars Jessica Biel as Julia, Jodel Furland as Jenny, and an assorted cast of others, but notable Stephen McHattie as Lieutenant Dodd. Fantastic actor from all kinds of wonderful films, but one in particular that I absolutely adore that. That's pretty much a in-your-face one-man show is a Pontypool, which is great. And then William B. Davis, the actor known as the cigarette smoking man from the X-Files TV show, and Jessica Biel is like an actor that I don't really care one way or another about. I've never really seen her in anything that required her to do much acting. I liked her for different reasons in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, but I was concerned about her pulling this off. She plays the nurse of a small town, and she does fine. It's not gonna blow you away, but she does fine. And Jodelle Ferland is a young, well, I guess a young woman at this point. She's 18. From films like, let's see, she was in briefly in The Cabin in the Woods recently. Unfortunately, the Twilight Saga. But Case 39, she played the little girl in the Silent Hill film, and a real weird, trippy little film from Terry Gilliam known as Tideland. But I love this actress, and I think that she has a bright future ahead of her. My only issue with her is she always seems to be cast as or play the, you know, oddball kid. But if you've read any reviews or, you know, any thoughts on this movie, The Tall Man, as of late, they pretty much all start off with, this is not a horror movie. And I think with Ligier attached to it and his history with Martyrs, a lot of people were expecting something really much more physically and visually horrific. But as it turns out, The Tall Man is kind of just your straight up whodunit drama, maybe some thriller mixed in there. And it centers essentially around, as I said, this small town where Jessica Biel's character, Julia, is the nurse. And this town has a terrible history of their children coming up missing. It was once a booming coal mine town. And once the mine shut down, it kind of descended into, you know, poverty and, you know, the local hangout is the kind of cafe, diner, slash bar place where the men all drink and, you know, the women are abused to one degree or another emotionally or physically. There's a lot of homeless people, and there's been this rash of their children going missing, and the local law enforcement, you know, led by Sheriff Chestnut, who's William B. Davis, and McHattie's character, Lieutenant Dodd, has come in to kind of figure out what the hell's going on and to find these kids. The Tall Man title obviously comes from a legend that's been built up over time. People are purporting to have seen this tall man in the woods surrounding this, you know, really isolated town that's, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by forest. And the locals believe that that it's this legendary, mythical being known as the Tall Man that's stealing their children. And the film essentially opens as you see a bruised and battered Julia having her wounds tended to by a nurse. And then we go back. We go back to see her interacting with the townsfolk and kind of get a general idea of her place in the town and the fact that her husband was a very prominent doctor in the community who has since passed away, and she's kind of, you know, the medical and psychological crutch for this community. And as the narrative plays along, her child falls victim to the tall man and is abducted essentially right in front of Julia, and Julia gives chase, and there's a long drawn out scene where she is fighting to get her child back from the quote-unquote tall man and fails, And it's not long before twist number one comes in. And this film is chock full of twists and turns and curves. And again, if you go in expecting this to be a horror movie, you're going to be probably quite disappointed. But aside from the fact that I get frustrated seeing Jodelle Ferland miscast, or I shouldn't say miscast, typecast. She plays Jenny as this mute child who is miserable with her existence and actually wants the tall man to take her away so she can escape it. And a few, you know, other minor flaws. It's a beautiful movie to look at. And like I said, the twists and turns and ultimate reveal throughout the narrative are, you know, in a sense, should be looked upon as a bit refreshing. And if you've all seen Martyrs, that takes a dramatic shift in tone and theme during the course of the story, and this does the same, and then throws in a couple extra ones at the end. So I really enjoyed this film. It's another one that's really got me excited again about this year and genre films in general. I give The Tall Man an 8 out of 10. And definitely all three of these films, I think, appeal to different types of tastes and moods that you might have when you're sitting down to watch a movie. So I hope that helped and maybe gave you something to look forward to or seek out. And as I said, the shows are going to be short right now, so we're clocking in just over a half an hour, and I think that's about good. So come by the site, theconduitspeaks.com. Make sure you you stop by the Facebook page as well. As I said, there's a lot of other stuff going on there too to complement the main site. And if you have any questions or comments, give me an email at theconduitspeaks@gmail.com. And we'll go 2 weeks from now. So we'll skip next week. And as today is Wednesday, August 29th, we'll be back, I guess, on Wednesday, September 12th, it looks like, as I lean over to see my calendar. So take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.